Welcome, everybody, to PokeSports Plus, a Pokemon Esports podcast where we talk with all different kinds of people from the Pokemon community.
I'm Mike, and I play with one Pokemon on the field.
I'm Kevin. I play with two Pokemon on the field.
And today we are here with Griffin Lettingham, the owner or the creator of Pekalytics.com. If you've ever taken a deep dive enough into team building or into just the basic usages of Pokemon, you'll have already heard of Pekalytics. Where you can check analytics of all your favorite Pokemon. Griffin, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. It's awesome to be here.
Tell us a little bit about your history with Pokemon and how it kind of led you to Pekalytics.
Sure, absolutely. I'm a 90s kid. I grew up playing the Pokemon series. Game Boy Color, actually Game Boy Original, I had one of those, and then Game Boy Color. But the first game I really got into was Pokemon Yellow.
Nice.
After that, Pokemon Silver. And then after Pokemon Silver, I actually dropped off for a while, came back around Gen 4 and picked up Soul Silver, actually, as my intro back into the series. And I caught my Lugia and I went on the internet and I'm like, how do I make this the best for battling? And I found this site, Smogon, and hopped on there and started reading about walls and stuff. And so having absolutely no idea what I was doing, I cruised onto the... to grab some vitamins, and I just started putting random defensive stats onto my Lugia, and I'm like, man, I'm doing this right. Like, this is how you competitively battle. And so I thought I was deep diving in there in Soul Silver, and then got into Black and White, and that's when I actually kind of learned about like singles and whatnot, started figuring out EVs and IVs a bit more. From there, I actually started trying to play more and more competitive, and got into VGC around XY, I guess. That's when I started. That I've been playing VGC ever since then. As you can tell, there was a very iterative process. Like it took a lot to learn. And so I'm a software developer by trade. That's what I do for work. And so along my process of trying to figure this out all by myself and with the help of forums and Reddit and 4chan and yada yada, I was like, there has to be a better way than this to figure this stuff out. Cause it's so complicated and it seemed so hard to find user-friendly stuff at the time. And so around then I found the Pokemon Showdown usage stats, which are provided monthly in various kinds of formats, but mostly they're text-based. There's a huge one, which is very data heavy. And so I took that and I decided to see if I could make that pretty. That was my first step. Came up with a website called Pokemeta. That was my original name for it. And it was really just like a bunch of graphs and stuff. And I actually have screenshots of it. It's pretty funny. It didn't look great, but it was kind of starting to portray this data in a format that humans could read and that maybe someone who wasn't super familiar could read. And then from there, I just started iterating and getting user feedback and et cetera. Started sharing it with Reddit early on and got lots of feedback there. And then as traffic picked up, just kept iterating, and then it kind of turned more into a heavy like stat site where I was trying to represent just all the numbers in one place for people to see. And that's pretty much where it is today. Still iterated a ton on it, but I mean, it's kind of been at its core state for a couple of years now.
So it started out pretty much what it is now, just you kept adding.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm seeing things on the site like damage calculators and team builders and Pokemon Go even has, has stats on there. How do you get the information from Pokemon Go?
Oh, that one's pretty cool. There's a piece of software called PokeBattler, I believe. There's a few similar sites, but what they've done is they've basically made a battle simulator where you can simulate every Pokemon Go Pokemon against every other Pokemon Go Pokemon with every moveset.
What?
And so, yeah, from that, you can calculate all these rankings and stuff. And it's a piece of open source software. So the people that make the software, they actually have their own website where they display the stats. And so I grabbed the software and I crunched some of my own data on it. And I chucked it up into my kind of Pekalytics UI shell there. I found their data source and found a way to translate that into the UI that like I know that my users like reading and stuff.
That's so cool. I mean, for us, neither Kevin nor I are big Pokemon Go fans. And
nope.
I assume that some people in our audience are, but I assume that most of the people in our audience are Pokemon enthusiasts. So they'll have heard of Pokemon Go, or they'll have played Pokemon Go back when, you know, it was having its boom in 2016.
Yeah.
But I think it's still very interesting for non Poco fans to know, you know, these different kinds of, like, there is a meta for Pokemon Go at this point, which is interesting. What's the significance, just so I know, I'm looking at the page right now, of lead, closer, switch, charger, attacker consistency. Like, are those all metrics that the site looks at?
Yeah. So it determines kind of, I actually couldn't get too heavily into the core of the simulator since it is a big open source project lots of people have worked on. Mm-hmm. So I don't actually know every inner working of it, but those are really just like in the Pokemon Go PvP system, it's 3v3. And you generally have sweepers and whatnot, and so you try and clean up as much of their team, and then you end up with your closer at the end who's kind of tanking the hits of what remains, and maybe you don't have perfect tight matchups at that point, but they make for a good closer just to finish off, or
like a sweeper.
Yeah, exactly. And like Altaria is actually a surprisingly good lead because it just chunks things right at the start, and then as soon as a counter comes in, you swap it out right away, and so it makes for a good lead. And there's actually a lot of cool parallels to how you play like real Pokemon.
So this is all Altaria needed. It just needed Pokemon Go to be used.
Exactly. <right. laughs> And followed by Registeel. It's like,
yeah. Yeah, really. Even just the top five are like, I have never seen most of these in play. Altaria, Registeel, Deoxys, Defense, Azumarill, Zweilous.
Like, yeah. I forgot Vigoroth is a Pokemon.
Right? Yeah, it's cool. It's cool to see.
Mm-hmm. That's really interesting. But back to the VGC 20 and the actually more than just VGC 2020, we've also got Overused and Ubers in the Pokemon Sword and Shield category. So these are all taken from monthly Pokemon Showdown statistics?
That's correct, yeah.
Interesting. Is it always the first of the month, or what is that like?
Generally, yeah. So stats have been coming up really quick the last few months from them, which is awesome. So It's been the first of the month, and all of people tweeting at me like, hey, when is it coming up? Like, oh, man, it's the first of the month. This just happened. Like, I got to get on this. And so, yeah, it's been pretty consistently first of the month.
So what is that take on your end? What do you have to do once the first of the month happens?
It's actually not too bad on my end. I've written a lot of scripts and stuff. This used to be significantly more manual, but I mean, as the years have gone, I've automated a lot more just because that's what I like to do. And so it's really just running a suite of scripts that I've written for myself, and they pull all the data, and then they format nicely for my site, and then they upload it to the site, and they make sure the deploy is smooth and all that. And it takes a little bit, but it's not too much of my time at this point to do the monthly iteration, which is nice.
I mean, I was definitely curious, looking at the usage stats, because I wasn't sure up until just this moment that it was always at the first of the month. So, you know, going back and looking at the site often, and seeing, you know, Togekiss and Incineroar at 63% at 60%, I'm like, oh, this is still a thing. Like, it's so interesting now that season three happened kind of like right around the first of the month, right? So everybody started using the same kind of Pokemon because they thought that those Pokemon would be really good.
Absolutely. I will say there's one other way that I've gotten the data before. And so that has been at the start of a new game or something. Mm-hmm. Because like when Sword and Shield released, there wasn't a month of data on Showdown for them to publish usage stats. Mm-hmm. And so I actually, a couple of years ago, I think I might've done it for Let's Go Pikachu Eevee first, but I wrote a replay crawler for the Showdown server nexus.psim. And so that's often where they have early formats, like long before they're actually ready to put on the proper Showdown servers. Oh. I don't actually know if they're affiliated with one another or if they're independent projects, but yeah, I wrote a replay crawler that was just watching public games coming in and then just collecting data on them. Cool. And so what that allowed me to do was kind of get really early data in real time to put up on Peakalytics. And so I wrote them so they could parse the data into the format of Peakalytics. And what that meant was like for LGPE, which was not a competitive game whatsoever, but by launch day, I already had like a week of data that I'd been crawling. And so on the day the game came out, I put that up and there was already a pretty defined meta for the game before it even released.
Wow.
Which is pretty cool. And it was actually really scary because I was just doing this for fun. Like, I mean, it wasn't meant to be a competitive game or anything. And I was just like, hey, maybe I'll show people some stats. And then I saw the people running that server. They saw my usage stats and they started making bans based on my stats.
Oh.
And I was like, oh no, this wasn't what I meant for whatsoever.
This isn't where I wanted this to go.
These are not perfect stats.
Analytics defining the metagame.
Do you find that still happening with overused or Ubers, like looking at your usage stats, or do you think that they're collecting that on their own?
Yeah, it's definitely on their own. Like since I'm using Smogon's usage dumps, they will generally, make all the bans and stuff on theirs. And so you'll often see their OU tiers go out right before my data comes up because they generally will crunch the data themselves. I mean, since Smogon mostly focuses on the 1v1, they'll put up their own infographics and stuff generally before the data is even done processing on their end. And so you get hints of the meta from them in the singles formats and stuff. And then once the data is live is generally when I can pick it up.
Now I'm looking at Peakalytics and a lot of our viewers are actually starting to get into competitive. Like they tell us, hey, I'm trying to get into competitive. Your podcast is great. They don't know how easy they have it by having Peakalytics. This is so clean. All of the sets and EV spreads are right there. All the items, the stats. Like back in even 2014, I don't think Peakalytics was out, right? Or if it was...
No, it wasn't.
It was... No? Yeah, so like...
It was Pokemeta at the start. And that was like... I think summer 2016, but no, yeah. I appreciate that. I mean, that was absolutely my goal, was just have the data here and be readable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because like before you used to have to like watch your own replays of Showdown games, play your own games. I used to have a YouTube channel back in 2014 where I would sit through a whole session of me team building and I would have like 8 tabs open. But like... Here I have everything on one site. It's great.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, it really does look like it was just, what are the 6 things that people need to know about this Pokemon in VGC? Their base stats, moves, teammates, items, abilities, EV spreads. Put them in 6 boxes. You're done.
Absolutely. My original build of the website was done on a 1920 by 1080 monitor. And so that's kind of where the site is perfect. That's where you get all 6 boxes in one view. Mm-hmm. It gets a little more awkward when you're on a laptop and stuff, then they start moving down the page, but yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
People know how to scroll. They'll be fine.
True. I mean, I'm resizing the page right now. Like it resizes fine, right? Like it's, you know, it goes from the just one to the two and one.
I accept that people want to probably use their mobile phones sometimes while they're playing game. And so I wanted to make it mobile friendly for sure. Mm-hmm.
So would you consider yourself a Pokemon fan first or a site designer first or like both?
Ooh, I think I definitely have to say Pokemon fan first. Mm-hmm. I think that's kind of like what really got me into this, because from a pretty young age, I knew I wanted to build games and stuff. And that was absolutely because of things like Pokemon and Mario, Crash Bandicoot, all those. Yeah.
Like this is a good resource for people who are putting together teams, but like how much would you say that you're well versed in Pokemon?
Oh, it's a tough question.
If you're looking at the usage and you're seeing the different spreads, like can you look at the spreads and kind of understand why they are there? Does that take a little bit more?
No, I do in a lot of cases. Definitely nice. Not the intricate spreads. Where it's like a 1% usage spread or something. They get pretty niche on there. But yeah, I do understand the competitive game really well. I'm just a bit hard on myself because I know that I'm not a super experienced competitive player. But I do know the meta quite well, just working with all the stats and stuff.
Do you find yourself using Peakalytics a lot as a resource?
Yeah, absolutely. I've built myself some tools that are based on the Peakalytics stats and stuff that I can even use.
Really?
While I'm playing the game, yeah. It's just probably not a great practice because when you're in a tournament, you don't get that stuff. But
so he, you hold the secret key.
Yeah, exactly. I've actually open sourced a lot of that stuff these days to try and help out other projects and whatnot. And so It is actually all on my GitHub if people ever want to try the tools I'm using, but yeah.
I can imagine that, you know, understanding the inner workings of Peakalytics is a lot like when people ask the question, how is math useful outside of a math class? Like, it's like, it's not unless you are, you know, trying to think dynamically. So like if you're in a tournament with Incineroar or with a Togekiss on the other side of the field, you know, being well-versed in Peakalytics in that kind of language, in the language of usage stats, you can kind of say, okay, well, typically these will have this, and typically that will mean X or Y. If there's an Incineroar out with an Assault Vest, I'll know not to go for certain moves. If there's an Incineroar with a Figgy Berry, I'll know not to go for certain types of moves, or an Agua Berry or an Yapapa Berry. You know, like I can understand that, like, to have a general and, you know, even further to that, broad understanding of what the site does and what information it takes and what the output was, that must be able to help your game quite often.
Yes, it definitely does. It definitely does.
When you were putting together a website like Peakalytics, did you come across any issues when you were first getting it started?
Well, yeah, with Pokemon, like I said, like when I started out, it was just graphs and numbers, and it was not nice to look at. And that's actually a really hard challenge, is trying to figure, like, looking at hundreds of thousands, millions of numbers and be like, how do I show this nicely so it makes sense? Like, and yeah, it went through a lot of changes. And I mean, I think that was probably my biggest stumbling point, just because I was trying to make it simple first, user-friendly first, new player first. And that's a huge challenge, trying to figure out how to make this crazy complicated data set accessible to a new player. Yeah, so that was definitely one of the foremost challenges. Another big thing that I've run into over the years is scaling the site up, just because it's got more and more traffic and traction and stuff. And I've had some pretty spectacular meltdowns where the server just crashes into the ground and I'm scrambling trying to figure things out, and that's always fun. One of the most notable ones was when the website first started out, I had passed along to A-Drive, a Twitch streamer and YouTuber, because he was doing his first series of Road to Ranked on there. And so I passed along to him. I was like, hey, like, maybe this can help you out and whatnot. And he started using it, and he was like, oh, man, this is really cool. And so he ended up showing it off on his stream one day, and I wasn't ready whatsoever. And I was actually watching his stream at the time too. And so within like, within 30 seconds probably of him announcing it on there, I had thousands of people slamming my server.
Wow.
And there was a bug when multiple people tried to do the same action at the same time, but I'd never had nearly enough traffic to ever hit this bug. And so when all these people suddenly rushed in, the server just fell over. And you could see A-Drive's face drop on the stream. He's like, oh crap, I think I just broke people. And he started tweeting me at that moment, and I had Twitter open, and I was like, seeing this all happen in real time on his stream while I'm trying to frantically fix the server, and it was really funny.
Hey, I broke this thing that you worked so hard.
Yeah.
I mean, it had to happen one day, right?
It did, right? Yeah, it just hardened me quicker than I ever thought it would happen. So it was pretty funny.
Wow. A builder walks up to this person in town, and he says, hey, I just built a bridge to get on over to the people across the river there. Tell your friends. So he tells his friends, and he tells 17,000 people, and then they all just kind of slam the bridge at the same time. The bridge collapses.
It's like Griffin just made a sandcastle, and A-Drive came and kicked it over.
I mean, the metaphors write themselves.
Oh, it was great. He was very apologetic and stuff, and you could tell he felt so bad. And I was like, no, like, it was awesome. I really appreciate it. That was definitely on me. Yeah, totally.
Traffic is traffic, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And that's something that you definitely fight with as a programmer, like the term tech debt is kind of when you go for the quick solution to a problem knowing it might bite you later. But you kind of make that call. You're like, if this becomes a problem in the future, then it's a good thing and I'm doing well. But then when you actually do well and it becomes a problem, then it really sucks.
Right. Do you still have a couple of those? What was it? Tech debt, did you say?
Oh, yeah.
Do you have a couple of those kind of in your back pocket with Peakalytics?
They are everywhere. Yes. Like I said, I've tried to open source some of the tools so other like developers and whatnot can try and use them for their projects. Mm-hmm. But one thing I'm scared of ever doing is open sourcing the actual Peakalytics code, because it is just a dumpster fire and I don't want people to see most of it.
It's an organized mess. Yeah,
it is. It is. Like whenever a new game comes out, I'm just chucking code on top of code and it's like, ew, I really hope this works. Oh, it's fun. That's
interesting. With Peakalytics and you know, the success from there, I think this is a good kind of jumping off point. What kind of opportunities has that kind of, you know, gotten you? Where have you been because of that? Has there been anything that has kind of popped up because of Peakalytics?
Yeah, I've definitely met people in the community that I would not have done so otherwise.
Right.
So that's been really cool just to talk to people, and I've had pros reach out and a lot of big names praise the site and ask questions about it and provide feedback, and that's really cool, and that's absolutely not something I ever expected when I started the website out. And that comes back to like the imposter syndrome, like I was mentioning, where I don't feel like I'm a very competent Pokemon player, but then all of these huge names are reaching out to me. And like, oh man, I'm not worthy. But yeah, that's been a really cool aspect as far as the Pokemon side. And then, I mean, yeah, development side, this is absolutely one of the, it's absolutely the biggest side project I've ever worked on myself. It has taught me so much about my career. And that's really actually reflected in my day job and stuff. Because there are things that you don't come across unless you're kind of running the show yourself.
Right.
And there have been huge learnings from there that I don't think I would have got from anywhere else. Nothing really comes to mind at the moment, but yeah, like people and career have been the two biggest takeaways for me for sure.
We talked to Calvin from Abiri.net the other day, and he said he actually met you at a competition. Do you compete often, or was that just kind of like a one-time thing?
No, so that was actually the first competition I've ever played in. So I've been playing for years. I've been playing VGC for years, but I live on Vancouver Island, which is just off the coast of Vancouver, British Columbia. And so we're on an island. There's not a huge Pokemon community here. And so there aren't really any local events whatsoever for VGC. The only way to go and play that is to take the ferry over to Vancouver. And that's about, I don't know, couple hour trip all said and done. And so it's not necessarily in my yard for me to just go play events.
Yeah.
And so this one was coming up and I wanted to check it out because I've had a lot of fun with VGC 20. And I just wanted to network, talk to people over there, et cetera. And so I was actually already planning this trip. I was going to head over. And then a couple weeks before it, Kelvin actually reached out to me on Twitter, not knowing that I'm in this region or anything. And he just kind of, praised Peakalytics and said that he's been working on his own project and it's heavily inspired by the work I do and et cetera. And so he showed me what he was doing, talked about it a bit. And when I went to respond to his message, I noticed that the school he goes to is over in Vancouver. I responded to all his questions about Peakalytics and about software and stuff. And then at the bottom, I was just kind of like, oh, hey, actually, we live pretty close to each other and I'm headed over there in 2 weeks to a Pokemon tournament. And it sounded like he played and he knew the community and whatnot. So I asked if he was planning to go there, and he actually was. And so we met up at the Vancouver MSS and chatted for a bit, and he showed me the prototype of Abiri just before he was ready to send it live and stuff. And we talked about the tech we were using, bounced ideas a little bit. And it was super cool to meet him. He was an awesome guy. And it was
you got
great
a sneak
to just
peek in it.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's not bad.
Very cool. And then, I heard your guys' show with him a couple weeks ago and he mentioned me. So, it's a great province for Pokemon websites, apparently.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like something's in the water. I don't know.
Yeah, and the other, the tournament organizer is Roshan, who ran Nugget Bridge back in the day. So,
oh, yeah.
It's just a whole pool of people here.
all these Vancouverites making Pokemon content.
It's true.
Not even bad. All right, now before we go for a quick break, we said at the beginning, I play with one Pokemon on the field. I'm a big singles guy. Kevin plays with two Pokemon on the field. He's a big VGC guy. How many Pokemon do you play with on your side of the field?
Oh, I play with two on the field.
There you go.
Hey, we still haven't had a single
nobody. Nobody's been single of the people that we've had on so far. Oh,
how
man.
How do you play without protect? It doesn't make sense.
Exactly. Mike, oh my God, this is a great story. Mike didn't know what follow me did before this season.
It's actually
he was like,
very
what is this
true.
Move? What is wide guard?
What is after you? What is quick guard? I use protect when I'm toxic stalling, and that is it. And now that that's basically gone, I don't have protect anymore.
Even if it wasn't gone, the timer wouldn't let you go to it.
The timer wouldn't let me do it. Yes,
that's awesome.
Well, I think with that, let's take a little break. When we come back, let's get into the actual game. Let's talk Pokemon. Let's talk shop for a little bit. We'll do that when we come back. So we'll see you in a little bit. Welcome back to PokeSports Plus and our conversation with Griffin Lettingham, aka the creator of Pikalytics. Griffin, what have you been up to lately in terms of competitive Pokemon? You said that that MSS was one of the first ones that you went to in a while. Are you still planning on getting into competitive at all, or are you just kind of playing it on your own?
A bit of both. I really like playing on Showdown. I really like playing on Ladder on console. Mm-hmm. I've been hitting Master Ball every season because you need that nice. BP, you know?
True.
So I definitely intend to keep doing that. Like I mentioned, being kind of exiled away on an island, it's tough to keep up with competitive. So I don't know if I'll have a whole lot of chance to carry on with that. Actually having my first kid in 3 weeks. And so
congratulations.
Thank you very much. So that doesn't help the tournament scene, you know?
Right.
Might make it tougher. So I definitely intend on continuing to play console, but real life tournament, it's hard to get to. It's hard to make work. As people who qualify for Worlds will tell you, it's a grind.
Oh, yes.
Do you compete in the international challenges at all?
I missed this last one. I have on the on previous games and whatnot.
Oh, are you thinking of doing it for this month?
Potentially. We'll see. Okay. We'll see.
Right.
Free t-shirt, well, see how the
schedule
man. Goes.
Kid I know. Coming in 3 months.
Yeah. I do have a pet team in my pocket if I find the time. But.
Okay. All right. Well, let's talk about that. Tell me about your team.
It's pretty run of the mill. Some of the choices. It's got a little bit of meme in there, you know, as every team
nice.
Needs to.
Good.
Yeah, so the team I've been playing lately, it focuses around kind of the Sylveon Tyranitar lead.
Oh, yeah.
Which I'm quite fond of. Pixelate Quick Attack into a Weakness Policy is pretty sweet.
Absolutely.
So that's kind of the core of the team right there. And then it's got Arcanine on there, who is just everybody's favorite.
I see you haven't replaced Arcanine for Incineroar yet.
No, and so...
I respect that.
I wish I could say that was intentional. It's honestly just because I've been busy. I mean, Arcanine doesn't get a parting shot, so
fair enough.
So, you know, it is what it is. Dragapult's on the team because it's Dragapult. I really like the special variant of Dragapult, just for the coverage it offers. I'm pretty fond. Gyarados is another one. I'm on Intimidate Gyarados with an Assault Vest, which is good times because so many people chuck Thunderbolts into Gyarados, and when it actually doesn't do a whole lot to it, they look very confused.
then they check Pikalytics and see Assault Vest as high.
Yeah, exactly. And then the last member on the team is Ferrothorn, I love Ferrothorn. He's not really meta at the moment. There are definitely better Trick Room as well as just better grass Pokemon. But I'm a big fan of the Leech Seed Stall. It's pretty tough with the timer nowadays. And at the MSS I mentioned, I did have someone just timer me. And I mean, that's how you beat a Ferrothorn.
Basically.
You can't blame them, you know?
You know what? I had never thought of doing that until this past international? No,
regional.
Collinsville. Collinsville, right. I had never thought to actually timer stall. That just hadn't been a thing in my lexicon. But I mean, there were so many times where I was just stalled out. And I'm like, well, how could I have possibly beaten this? This Pokemon's just too defensive. Answer is, you just beat as much as you can, and then you take a lot of time in your turns. I don't know.
That is the answer. Yeah. If I can spam protects, then so can my opponent, and it ends up working better for them. Exactly. Sometimes.
It's interesting that you mentioned Arcanine. I had thought about Arcanine recently. Because obviously on Pikalytics, Arcanine is set as a, you know, quite low usage, but at the snapshot at which that was taken, everybody was trying out Incineroar over Arcanine. So mm-hmm. now looking at current day usage, and seeing, you know, Incineroar and Arcanine pretty much neck and neck actually in their usage for the past like week, I would say. It mm-hmm. is probably fair to say that nobody is, or not very many people, are using Arcanine and Incineroar on the same team. So to see Incineroar up at around 25% to 28% and Arcanine at literally 27%, 26%, it's probably like fair to say that about 50% of teams are using either a Arcanine or a Incineroar. I'm curious, kind of what your thoughts on the divide between Arcanine and Incineroar are. I know one kind of fills a certain niche, but in that Arcanine mm-hmm. Incineroar now has the parting shot. But why the choice to specifically add Arcanine?
My choice for Arcanine was because Incineroar wasn't legal yet.
Oh, fair.
In hindsight, I probably would have taken Incineroar on the team. Yeah, Arcanine can be built in so many different ways, whereas Incineroar, you're kind of locked into a bit of a mold mm-hmm. in a lot of cases. And so I find with Arcanine, you can go rogue a little, since you could be choice banned, you could be just using berries, you could be special attacking, you could really be support with just Will-O-Wisp, Snarl, all that. Like, I feel like Arcanine can give you a bit of an advantage just in your opponent doesn't exactly know what you're going to be using. Like throwing out a wild charge with a choice band, that hurts. You might not be expecting that necessarily. And so that's one of the angles I like for Arcanine still to this day. But Arcanine doesn't have fake out, and yeah. fake out's pretty good.
I mean, I've always said this, Arcanine is one of the most versatile Pokemon that I've ever seen. It could do almost anything.
Yeah.
What it does have over Incineroar though, is that it's a lot faster with its snarls. That's one thing I will say. But yeah, that fake out thing is kind of a little bit sad, but fake out's not even super necessary this meta. It's really only good against like Focus Sash users. And if they expect it, they could just D-max. And it's like, oh, okay. Wasted my fake out.
Yeah, for sure. And that's where extreme speed works well on Arcanine.
Yeah.
If you need it for the Focus Sash instead of the interrupts, then yeah. It fills the void okay.
Just takes an extra turn, but yeah.
But yeah, no, that's very true. Arcanine, it's crazy how versatile Arcanine is for being a monotype Pokemon. Like Incineroar has that dark typing there, but yeah, it's pretty wild.
Fire type in general is just such a defensive typing. You wouldn't expect it out of a monotype, but there's 5 resistances on a fire type Pokemon. Yeah. It's crazy.
It is.
I really thought that Incineroar would have been better than it turned out to be, but I feel like, you know, the whole fact that it can't be touched by prankster moves is one thing, but people kind of work around it pretty well, I
for
think.
Sure, for sure.
But I think that was kind of the shift that happened at the beginning of the month, though, is everybody was prepared for Incineroar to be this extreme powerhouse, so everybody did their research.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And so like that meta was over before it began.
I think the issue with Incineroar right now is there's like no good Xerneas replacement to pair it next to. Right? It's like the closest
Mimikyu.
Thing. I mean, I guess. The closest thing you really have to it is like crit Togekiss.
Right. Yeah.
But even then everyone has a counter for it on their team because it's on like what, 60% of teams?
Right.
Yeah.
Also because Rhyperior exists. I'm interested in this new Dusclops advent as well. Like it's I'm not used to seeing Dusclops. I don't play, or I never used to play VGC, So was this a thing before, Kevin?
I mean, it's always been like a Trick Room setter, a very reliable Trick Room setter. Issue with it being you're kind of committed to EVLA with the Dusclops, so you're not going to have a mental herb for taunts and stuff. So it's an easy taunter, but we have the situation now with Dusclops that it uses ally switch. If it expects you, it could just ally switch and then Trick Room with the adjacent Pokemon. You can't fake it out because it's a ghost type. Mm-hmm. It's pretty reliable in that sense. But yeah, it's very hard to one shot a Dusclops. I don't know if you know if you've ever tried it. It's like it's very hard to one shot it. Like I'm running a team with Bassimian and Life Orb Duraludon. There's one very specific combination that I have to do with Knockoff and Max Wormwind just to Oko.
Right.
That's my Dusclops count. It relies on me not getting follow me.
Which 90% of the time will also happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
You gotta play the roads, you know?
I mean, the one good thing about Dusclops is it doesn't do much other than that, right? So if you could just make him not switch and play defensively, you could just run out the Trick Room.
So we had said Pixelite Sylveon, the Tyranitar with weakness policy, the Arcanine. Do you remember the other ones on your team?
Dragapult, Gyarados, and Ferrothorn were the Dragapult. Other three. Yeah.
Oh, right. Gyarados
and
Ferrothorn. Yeah. I flip-flopped a lot on the Gyarados slot. I really wanted Rotom Wash in there. I really wanted Gastrodon in there. I wanted a lot of things, but I just love Assault Vest Gyarados so much.
Interesting. Assault Vest, though. Why that?
Yeah.
Gyarados is a powerhouse.
Yeah. Fair. Biggest thing is just because Rotom is so popular.
Thunderbolts.
And they're generally going to be expecting either like a band on a Gyarados or some sort of a berry or et cetera. And so it's often assumed that you can just chuck Thunderbolts into it pretty freely. Right. But I've got it, pretty... especially defensive invested as well as assault vest, and so it can take them, and it can take a few pretty easily in Dynamax. And so it's, even if it just buys you a turn where they use the very wrong move and they're surprised, that's often enough for Gyarados to come in and just maybe Oko a Pokemon, or at least it's coming in and intimidating, taking a hit and doing some damage.
Here's a question I have for everyone. We had a situation where we were talking about this on the previous pod with Pokemon with learning competitive, the game doesn't really do much in terms of explaining to you what IVs, EVs, or anything of that nature at all. Where did everyone here learn how to play competitive? I'll go first. So for me, it was like I learned a lot from online forums, a lot of trial and error, and just trying to go out in the wild and noticing my stat changes. Like I actually noticed it.
Really?
Because I'm like, I'm training around a lot of Dusclopses. Why am I getting a lot more special defense than normal when I level up? I'm confused. Yeah,
you noticed that?
Blowing me away right now.
And this game was built around the fact that you wouldn't. That's amazing.
I actually noticed that. And I was like, what? I was like 10.
You're a genius.
When Dusclops is around. Jeez.
You're a child prodigy.
No, don't say that.
That's awesome.
What happened?
Yeah, what happened? I decided to make a podcast.
I love how confused people used to be about it in Gen 1.
Yeah.
How people would say, like, don't use rare candies because it makes your Pokemon level up weaker.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just because people didn't understand how EVs compounded in Gen 1. Mm-hmm. And so people would be scared of rare candying their favorite Pokemon because they didn't want them to get weaker, but actually not how it works at all.
Yeah.
I do very, very, very subtly remember exactly that. People are like, no, don't use rare candies. You think they're good, but they're not. And I'm like,
yeah,
a level is stats for everything. And they're like, no, it can be more. Oh man, I think I learned about EVs. Okay, so I learned about EVs like far before I learned about IVs by a long shot. I think I learned about EVs Gen 5. Yeah, end of Gen 4, beginning
Gen
of Gen
what?
5.
Oh, so that's no, what 5 is?
Yeah, it was either 4 or 5 or 5. Yeah, like I had started looking at some YouTube videos, I think. Like YouTube was a thing already by then. Mm-hmm. People were like, oh, I max special attacked my, Ampharos or whatever. And I'm like, really? What does that mean? And so I look that up. I go to, I don't know if Bulbapedia was a thing back then, but at some point, Bulbapedia taught me nearly everything I know. And that was back in the day where you had to grind certain Pokemon, right? So you're going into Root whatever and taking down Rattatas like over and over and over just to get, I believe it was attack or Raticates to get like twice that.
Two attack.
And then, you know, learning what the cap was a whole thing and trying not to miss that. I very distinctly remember having like a post-it or a like little sheet of paper where I would put a little tick every single time I took out a Rattata.
Oh yeah, because it had the 255. There was no cap yet.
Right, because so you didn't want to hit that 255. You wanted to stop very finely at 252.
I did the exact same thing. Those notches on the paper, that was the only way.
Yeah. Like you were not going to remember it.
You'd vitamin up to 100, and then you go from there. Yep.
That's right.
Yeah. And then I'd like, sometimes it would be late at night, and I'd go to sleep, and I'd come back the next day, and I'd look at my notebook, and I'm like, oh no, I completely forgot where it was. And then you just have to start over, just breed a new one, try again.
Right.
Because it has to be perfect. There's no other option.
And it's been so long, I don't even remember how I used to... Were there judges back in the day?
For IVs? No, yeah. I don't think so. I think Gen 6 or Gen 5, maybe. I don't know. I didn't play Gen 5, but Gen 6 had it.
Yeah, I don't even think that I IV bred in Gen 5. I think that fully started in Gen 6, or Gen 6 was catastrophic enough for my learning that I completely forgot about what Gen 5 was.
I think like, you can, if you level up to 50 with, or I mean, if you level up at all, I guess you can see with stats what they're supposed to be. If you have 31, that'd be the way to do it.
Like the worst thing.
That's why I said these people getting into it now have it easy.
Oh man. How did you learn about the inner workings?
So yeah, EVs. Like I mentioned earlier, that was with Lugia. And so that was my first exposure to EVs, was looking up on Smogon and seeing, oh yeah, Lugia can be this kind of wall. You give it these stats, whatever. I went and bought my vitamins, chucked them in, and thought I was done. wasn't really the case. And then when I started trying to train more Pokemon in that game, I started reading a little bit more and figuring out that, oh, they start at zero, and if you play through the story with them, they actually get ruined. And so it kind of progressed there with EVs. I don't think I had a clue about IVs at this point. I would see those numbers like 31, 31, and I would just think, oh, I have to try and make them as good as I can in that stat. And that was all I had for a while. Huh. I think one of the first times I really realized about IVs was actually the school I went to had a Pokemon club there. And the guys in the club there actually were the ones who really kind of got me into VGC in the first place. Mm-hmm. And so they were really big competitors actually in BC and stuff. And I remember wonder trading with random people, or is that what it was called? Mm-hmm. I think so. And I got a Ghastly that had 5 shapes marked on it. And I asked them, I was like, what does this mean? Like, I've never seen one with these markings before. And yeah, they kind of explained it to me, ran me through the whole process. And then I started reading on it. I was like, holy, this is crazy.
My Pokemon can be
and
even
also
better.
Why did and why did this person send me a almost perfect Ghastly? What are they doing? Like, don't they need this one?
Can I give it back?
Turns out they don't. yeah, exactly.
Here, I have a Lugia.
I swear it's a really good special one. So I think that's really when I kind of first clicked there what IVs were doing and how they were being marked and stuff. And so yeah, wonder trading and whatnot, I got into IVs actually pretty late, because wonder trading was gen 6 or something, I think. Yeah. And so from there, that's when I learned about breeding and etc., and then it's all downhill from there,
right?
Many thousands of hours later, here we are.
It's so funny that you say, you know, the team that you play in game are basically ruined. Like, it's absolutely true. Like, I had never understood it until just a couple of years ago when I started learning about, EVs and IVs and all that stuff, Gen 5 grinding the Rattatas. Yeah. It's programmed to make you feel like you are super, super strong because of the bond that you have with your Pokemon or whatever, because, you know, you are the one knocking out these Pokemon, gaining their stats. And then by the end of the game, you have like this, although it's kind of a mess in how their EVs are laid out, like they, none of the people that you face in game, the NPCs, like their Pokemon are specifically not EV trained, so that you can take them down with Pokemon that, you know, generally shouldn't be taking these Pokemon down if you're playing on a truly competitive sense.
Yeah. It's honestly, but it's such genius game design. Yeah. As some, like I'm in the industry and I'm constantly working through game design problems and stuff. And I frequently reference back to Pokemon and how they do such a good job of like storytelling with these crazy underlying mechanics without showing them to the players whatsoever. And it's, they're displaying the narrative of the anime that everyone knows and stuff, where you grow with your Pokemon, and it's actually these crazy math formulas that you have no idea about as you're playing through the game. Like, it's wild.
Just the damage calc formula is intimidating. I've seen it. Mike has talked about it.
I've talked about it. I've gone into like a crazy 4 a.m. rabbit hole trying to understand what damage calcs do and trying to like pinpoint, okay, this has this influence on the damage because of this and this and this and this, like, and then applying it to the actual game, like to put up rain and to put down a terrain and to have an item and to do this. And like the information is all there, but it's so hard to just remember on hand all of the calculations that need to happen. And at the end of all of those calculations, you're just like, yeah, it should probably take it out. Like,
there's a 15% chance it won't.
That's about as far as I've gotten with it. It's like, now I'm like, I feel like this will work. I play most of my games off of emotion.
Yeah, that's fair.
It seems
that's
about
fair.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, it's so cool jumping into damage calculators. Like when I was first exposed to that, just seeing the numbers changing and noticing how dramatically I can affect the results by setting up these different things and changing
like
my stats so slightly. Yeah, it's crazy. It's like the meme where the girl has all the math symbols floating on her face and stuff.
Yep. That was literally the thumbnail of that episode. We talked about except we had a Pikachu with math.
What it was.
Yeah, it's so cool. And when you learn how to EV spread based on that, when you're trying to not get O-code by a certain Pokemon and stuff, that's just even next level. That's crazy.
You're optimizing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's where we go to Peakalytics and we take those sets.
Yeah. me too.
Nice
Someone's
segue.
Someone's doing this better.
Nice segue. Back to Peakalytics. One last thing before we go. What is in the future for Peakalytics? Do you have anything planned, or is it kind of follow? Is it where you want it to be?
Oh, yeah. There are so many places I could take the website. And the biggest factor is just time and the ability to make something look pretty. I have so many pieces of code like stored on my personal computer and stuff for different features and whatnot. Like I've probably rebuilt the team builder like 15 times and I've never let any of that go out public because I'm just not happy with it. And I'm also really not happy with the current team builder, just going on the record to say that. I want it to be so much better, but I have a tough time, like trying to represent it the way I want. But yeah, there's constantly projects that I'm working on for the site. And sometimes they make it out there. Like, yeah, the team builder was one of those. The Pokemon Go thing was something that I saw this one and I was like, holy crap, I should just do that tonight. Right. And so sometimes these things work, sometimes they don't. But yeah, I really just want to find ways to go into the data more. Because, I mean, yeah, there's so much data out there for us. And there's so much you can do with it. Like a few years ago, I made a big spreadsheet that I threw up on Twitter, and it was the top, I think, 20 pairs of two leads and their win percent against all the other pairs of two leads. And it was this crazy like 1,000-cell spreadsheet. And it's just like you can just do all of that with this data that we have. And it's so cool to look at.
It is. That's my jam.
I know. It's crazy. So yeah, I want to try and keep looking for innovative things like that. And I'm always listening for people to give me ideas. Just today on Twitter, someone tweeted me and asked if we'll be able to sort or search based on moves and abilities and stuff ever. And it's something that I've actually wanted to get in for quite a while, but there's a big data constraint there because I'm going to have to expose the moves of every Pokemon in the ranking on the page at once. Even if they're hidden, the data still has to be there. And that's a lot of data. And I don't want to like slow people's computers down. And so there's always this constant struggle of if I want to do something cool and if I want to keep the site working nicely.
And then I'm noticing on the tournaments page, you've got the past 4 years of, well, three and a bit of VGC teams. And then VGC 20, like, is that just a index that you create, you know, after the fact, like after the year is done, do you post everybody's teams, or is that something that you would want to roll out kind of in real time?
I do that one when possible. So Pokemon shares regional results and stuff on their official website every once in a while. I don't think any are up at the moment. I haven't actually checked in a week or two. But I wrote a bot that just kind of grabs all that data and turns it into Peakalytics data. And so, yeah, I kind of rely on Pokemon for that. I know a lot of the other sites, a lot of the popular sites like VGC Stats, for example, they collect data from the tournaments that are going on currently. I'm not doing any of that. They're doing a way better job at mapping tournaments than I am. So please use them for tournaments. as well as, yeah, like Babiri for daily stats. I can't do that. And so they're a great resource to have on the side of Peakalytics. But yeah, like these are just things that at the core of Peakalytics, I'm just trying to take the data that's out there and turn it into user-friendly. And so I'm basically just always looking for different data sources that Pokemon's exposing or, yeah, like Showdown is exposing, etc.
Perfect.
I've hooked Pokemon Home into a like packet sniffer to watch the network traffic to see if I could use it to collect ranked data on there. But I think they've actually got it pretty encrypted. The old Pokemon GL, you could actually get the data off of that really easily. And so for all of like Sun and Moon, I had all the GL data crunching on there, but I don't think we can do that with Pokemon Home, unfortunately.
Pokemon Jail, more like. Nice. Mike, you got him. Nice. All right. All right. I think with that, let's call it a day. Griffin, thank you so much for joining us. This conversation has been amazing. I've really enjoyed that.
Thank you guys. Yeah, I love the work that you guys do with your podcast, and I've been listening for quite a while. Actually, I was pretty stoked when you reached out to me. I love meeting more people in the community and finding other content creators and resources. And so I was really stoked when you guys reached out to me. It was awesome to talk to you.
Thanks
guys.
So much.
I appreciate that. That's something that this podcast has really kind of allowed us to do as well, is just to talk to the people who are doing things that we already know of, or, you know, people that our listeners have kind of exposed us to, and just kind of getting to sit down and having a conversation with them is very, we feel very lucky to be able to do that.
Absolutely.
Griffin, if people want to get in contact with you, where are some places that people can find
the
you?
The most open place probably is on Twitter. So that's twitter.com/Peakalytics, PIKALYTICS, like analytics, but Peakalytics. I try and answer DMs on there. I don't always see them. So I'll try and catch your DMs if you send them to me, but also just openly tweet to me. You can also find me on GitHub under Griffin Lettingham. GitHub is a programming code website where you can share your projects and stuff. If you want to look at any of the projects I talked about that I open source, they're all on there. I wrote an article recently about using AI to try and build EV spreads automatically, and that the code for that is on there, so it's kind of fun. I'd say Twitter's probably the easiest.
And then of course, at the very least, if you aren't already and you're looking for a way to understand what teams are being used or what Pokemon are being used most often, head to peakalytics.com. Kevin, where can people find you?
Twitter and Instagram, X-Rays Ovation.
Same here. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Still Just Mike. You can find the podcast at Pokesports Pod on Twitter or Pokesports Podcast on where the other places, Instagram or Patreon.
Everywhere else.
Everywhere else. You look up Pokesports, you'll find us eventually. Guys, until then, again, thank you so much for joining us, Griffin. We've been having a great conversation, and I hope to see everybody next time. Peace out.
Later. Bye-bye.